The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath by H.P. Lovecraft. Part 12. Meanwhile, the ghoul that was Pikmin had glibbered an order to the Night Gaunts, and the whole army soared higher into the air. Up toward the stars the grotesque columns shot, till nothing stood out any longer against the sky, neither the gray granite ridge that was still, nor the carven mitered mountains that walked. All was blackness beneath, as the fluttering legion surged northward amidst rushing winds and invisible laughter in the ether. And never a Shantak or less mentionable entity rose from the haunted wastes to pursue them. The farther they went, the faster they flew, till soon their dizzying speed seemed to pass that of a rifle ball and approach that of a planet in its orbit. Carter wondered how, with such speed, the Earth could still stretch beneath them, but knew that in the land of dream dimensions have strange properties. That they were in a realm of eternal night he felt certain, and he fancied that the constellations overhead had subtly emphasized their northward focus, gathering themselves up, as it were, to cast the flying army into the void of the boreal pole, as the folds of a bag are gathered up to cast out the last bits of substance therein. Then he noticed with terror that the wings of the Night Gaunts were not flapping any more. The horned and faceless steeds had folded their membranous appendages and were resting quite passive in the chaos of wind that whirled and chuckled as it bore them on. A force not of earth had seized on the army, and ghouls and night gaunts alike were powerless before a current which pulled madly and relentlessly into the north, whence no mortal had ever returned. At length a lone pallid light was seen on the skyline ahead, thereafter rising steadily as they approached, and having beneath it a black mass that blotted out the stars. Carter saw that it must be some beacon on a mountain, for only a mountain could rise so vast as seen from so prodigious a height in the air. Higher and higher rose the light and the blackness beneath it, till all the northern sky was obscured by the rugged conical mass. Lofty as the army was, that pale and sinister beacon rose above it, towering monstrous over all peaks and concernments of earth, and tasting the atomless ether where the cryptical moon and the mad planet reel. No mountain known of man was that which loomed before them. The high clouds far below were but a fringe for its foothills. The groping dizziness of topmost air was but a girdle for its loins. Scornful and spectral climbed that bridge betwixt earth and heaven, black in eternal night, and crowned with a chent of unknown stars, whose awful and significant outline grew every moment clearer. Ghouls meeped in wonder as they saw it, and Carter shivered in fear lest all the hurtling army be dashed to pieces on the unyielding onyx of that Cyclopean cliff. Higher and higher rose the light, till it mingled with the loftiest orbs of the zenith, and winked down at the flyers with lurid mockery. All the north beneath it was dark blackness now. Dread stony blackness from infinite depths to infinite heights, with only that pale winking beacon perched unreachably at the top of all vision. Carter studied the light more closely, and saw at last what lines its inky background made against the stars. There were towers on that Titan mountaintop, horrible domed towers in noxious and incalculable tiers and clusters beyond any dreamable workmanship of man, battlements and terraces of wonder and menace, all limned tiny and black and distant against the starry Shent glowed malevolently at the uppermost rim of sight. Capping that most measureless of mountains was a castle beyond all mortal thought, and in it glowed the Daemon light. Then, Randolph Carter knew that his quest was done, and that he saw above him the goal of all forbidden steps and audacious visions, the fabulous, the incredible home of the Great Ones atop unknown Kadath. Even as he realized this thing, Carter noticed a change in the course of the helplessly wind-sucked party. They were rising abruptly now, and it was plain that the focus of their flight was the Onyx Castle where the pale light shone. So close was the great black mountain that its sides sped by them dizzily as they shot upward, and in the darkness they could discern nothing upon it. Vaster and vaster loomed the tenebrous towers of the knighted castle above, and Carter could see that it was well nigh blasphemous in its immensity. Well might its stones have been quarried by nameless workmen in that horrible gulf rent out of the rock in the hill pass north of Inquanock. For such was its size that a man on its threshold stood even as air out on the steps of Earth's loftiest fortress. The shent of unknown stars above the myriad domed turrets glowed with a sallow, sickly flare, so that a kind of twilight hung about the murky walls of slippery onyx. The pallid beacon was now seen to be a single shining window high up in one of the loftiest towers, and as the helpless army neared the top of the mountain, Carter thought he detected unpleasant shadows flitting across the feebly luminous expanse. It was a strangely arched window, of a design wholly alien to Earth. The solid rock now gave place to the giant foundations of the monstrous castle, and it seemed that the speed of the party was somewhat abated. Vast walls shot up, and there was a glimpse of a great gate through which the voyagers were swept. All was night in the Titan courtyard, and then came the deeper blackness of inmost things, as a huge arched portal engulfed the column. Vortices of cold wind surged dankly through sightless labyrinths of onyx, and Carter could never tell what cyclopean stairs and corridors lay silent along the route of his endless aerial twisting. Always upward led the terrible plunge in darkness, and never a sound, touch, or glimpse broke the dense pall of mystery. Large as the army of ghouls and night-gaunts was, it was lost in the prodigious voids of that more than earthly castle. And when at last there suddenly dawned around him the lurid light of that single tower room whose lofty window had served as a beacon, it took Carter long to discern the far walls and high distant ceiling, and to realize that he was, indeed, not again, in the boundless air outside. Randolph Carter had hoped to come into the throne room of the Great Ones with poise and dignity, flanked and followed by impressive lines of ghouls in ceremonial order, and offering his prayer as a free and potent master among dreamers. He had known that the Great Ones themselves are not beyond a mortal's power to cope with, and had trusted to luck that the other gods and their crawling chaos, Nyarlathotep, would not happen to come to their aid at the crucial moment, as they had so often done before when men sought out Earth's gods in their home or on their mountains. And with his hideous escort, he had half hoped to defy even the other gods, if need were, knowing as he did that ghouls have no masters, and that night-gaunts own not Nyarlathotep, but only archaic Nodens for their lord. But now he saw that supernal Kadath in its cold waste is indeed girt with dark wonders and nameless sentinels, and that the other gods are, of a surety, vigilant in guarding the mild, feeble gods of Earth. Void as they are of lordship over ghouls and night-gaunts, the mindless, shapeless blasphemies of outer space can yet control them when they must. so that it was not in state, as a free and potent master of dreamers, that Randolph Carter came into the Great One's throne room with his ghouls. Swept and herded by nightmare tempests from the stars, and dogged by unseen horrors of the northern waste, all that army floated captive and helpless in the lurid light, dropping numbly to the onyx floor, when, by some voiceless order, the winds of fright dissolved. Before no golden dais had Randolph Carter come, nor was there any august circle of crowned and haloed beings with narrow eyes, long-lobed ears, thin nose, and pointed chin, whose kinship to the carven face on Ngranek might stamp them as those to whom a dreamer might pray. Save for the one tower room, the onyx castle atop Karath was dark, and the masters were not there. Carter had come to unknown Karath in the cold waste, but he had not found the gods. Yet still the lurid light glowed in that one tower room whose size was so little less than that of all outdoors, and whose distant walls and roof were so nearly lost to sight in thin curling mists. Earth's gods were not there, it was true, but of subtler and less visible presences there could be no lack. Where the mild gods are absent, the other gods are not unrepresented. And certainly, the onyx castle of castles was far from tenantless. In what outrageous form or forms terror would next reveal itself, Carter could by no means imagine. He felt that his visit had been expected, and wondered how close a watch had all along been kept upon him by the crawling chaos Nyarlathotep. It is Nyarlathotep, horror of infinite shapes and dread soul, and messenger of the other gods, that the fungus moonbeasts serve. And Carter thought of the black galley that had vanished when the tide of battle turned against the toad-like abnormalities on the jagged rock in the sea. Reflecting upon these things, he was staggering to his feet in the midst of his nightmare company, when there rang, without warning, through that pale-litten and limitless chamber, the hideous blast of a daemon trumpet. 3 times pealed that frightful brazen scream, and when the echoes of the third blast had died chucklingly away, Randolph Carter saw that he was alone. Whither, why, and how the ghouls and night gaunts had been snatched from sight was not for him to divine. He knew only that he was suddenly alone, and that whatever unseen powers lurked mockingly around him were no powers of Earth's friendly dreamland. End of part 12.